Hey, everybody, it's Chris. This episode is a new series we've started over here called Builder. We'll be talking with climbers just like you who in some way allowed us to help them in their efforts to build a better climber. And I'm not really a fan of client testimonials. Maybe that's just because I'm a contrarian to what people say I'm supposed to do, but I absolutely believe in the things we make. So what we're doing here is interrogating those things alongside the climbers who are using them. And the builder we're talking to today is Lauren Abernathy, who runs Good Spray Climbing. Lauren, thanks for coming on to tell your story.
I'm so excited to be here. This is so fun. It's been like 2 or 3 years since my initial appearance on the Power Company podcast. So
yeah, it's been a while. For sure. First, let's get into some rapid fire builder details to let everybody know who you are. What is your age?
28.
Occupation?
Climbing coach and business owner.
I love it. Height?
5'4".
What's your ape index?
+1 on a good day.
Well, that's a good day. I'm even, so +1 would be a great day. Years that you've been climbing?
9.
Top climbing grade. And this can be whatever you want it to be, sport, boulders, whatever, or all of it.
Let's go for sport climbing. 5'12 doggies.
Nice. What is your climbing superpower?
Dead points.
And what's your climbing kryptonite?
Having to dead point from scrunchy boxes where my feet are on my face.
I love it when the superpower and the kryptonite overlap.
I'm like, well, if I have to do anything from a scrunchy box, I'm like, oh no. So that's, hate that. Yep.
Yeah. What is the like plan, product, service that you have used?
I have done a custom plans with Blake for 4 years now.
Long time.
Yeah. And then I've been working in person with Nate in Salt Lake doing movement coaching for about a year on and off.
Yeah. And that's why I wanted to talk to you today, because we're in this, you know, multi-month long exploration of movement and how we learn to move and how we think we learn to move, what we're getting wrong, what we're getting right, and how to do it better. So let's get into it. It's time to build. Okay, so first, you've been working with Blake for quite a long time doing custom training plans, and we always build in some sort of like movement practice into the sessions. But then you're also doing these in-person sessions with Nate. So what I kind of want to know first is, what is the, like, what was missing from the custom plans that led you to want to work with someone in person? And feel free to be critical here, because I do think remote coaching has some holes that it just can't fill, you know, no matter what, no matter how good the remote coach is, it's still not the same as being in person.
Totally. Honestly, I think like what it was. So for me as a business owner, I was like, Chris and I were just talking before we hopped on to here. I feel like a lot of times I lack energy and sometimes struggle to prioritize my own climbing. So for me, like one of the biggest reasons I wanted to work with Nate in person was because I felt like sometimes in my sessions, I would just like not have the mental energy to push myself, and having someone else, you know, or those things where, you know, you should probably try that boulder for, you know, well, insert scrunchy box here, you know, my kryptonite scrunchy box boulder, and I know I should get on it, but, you know, either I got up at 6 a.m. to make sure I could get my session in before my workday starts, or I'm doing it after a long day where I've watched like 4 hours of climbing videos of my clients, and I'm just like, I can't think about rocks anymore. My brain hurts. So I think it was really helpful for me to have in-person coaching, because, you know, having another person pushing you, having another person to interact, like I also just know as a person, I do really well being coached, which is why I like having accountability in that way. So I think for me, the biggest thing was just getting more out of those sessions when I did show up to the gym, to make sure that I was actually truly working on the things that I needed to be working on. And as a coach, I've coached other coaches. Wow, that was a lot of saying the word coach. But it is really funny how even as coaches, like, we know what we're bad at, but we're still human beings that are resistant to fully pushing ourselves on the things totally. That we suck at, especially when we're, you know, tired, etc. So I think that was like the biggest thing that I knew I needed. So yeah. I think the accountability and then just the like extra push. And also being told you're like climbing well is nice. Like as a coach, I'm always telling people that, but I think sometimes, you know, having some external, hey, way to go is also really encouraging and fun. So.
Yeah, no doubt. I think there's a lot there. Number one, I love how dedicated to improving your climbing you are. I think it's really easy to reach a level of like, expertise, and I'm air quoting that here because I don't even know what that means, but to reach this level of expertise where you can then offer your expertise to other people and then just to get stagnant with your own climbing. You know, I think that's a really easy thing to do, especially when you're getting busy and it's like, I have to choose now. Do I put my time toward my own climbing or do I put my own time toward my clients? And very often as a business owner, as a coach, we put that time toward the clients and our own climbing suffers. So having someone else, you know, looking at your climbing is a real benefit, I think.
Yeah, it's really nice to be supported.
Yeah. And also, you know, something Nate and I have been talking about quite a bit lately is like on the wall awareness is this interesting thing that you might think you're good at it. We all think we're relatively good at it, but we aren't aware of the things we aren't aware of, you know? Like, there are things happening and we just don't know. One of the best ways to see that is, you know, video over time, but even better is someone standing there who's picking those things out and who can put you into situations to highlight those things. And you'll put constraints in that makes that solution no longer effective so that you then have to do something different and learn something new. So having those eyes, I think, is really important.
For sure. Another thing I think can be really helpful is I know as climbers, and I'm sure you talked about this or you will talk about it at some point during this movement series, but like simple single word phrases and cues. It's good to be able to give that to yourself while you're doing a move, but odds are you probably aren't going yelling chest up like in the middle of the gym as you're dead pointing to something. But when you have an external coach that's able to go, hey, I'm going to say this while you do this so that you remember and really, you know, give this like small tweak that we're working on 100%. That's really big.
Mm-hmm, totally. When you were going into this, was there like a specific goal that you brought to Nate's in-person sessions that like, I want to get better at this? Or was it more like, I just want you to watch and tell me what I need to get better at?
Yeah, I think it was more that one. I definitely came in very open-minded. I was probably... oh gosh, it was probably like February or March of last year when I knew that I was going into another summer of my wonderful ongoing project in Lander. But I went in kind of going like, hey, this is my goal for, you know, over the summer, but it's February, March or whatever right now. So let's work on anything, like whatever you think, let's go for it. Like, I think I had some ideas of what I needed to work on, but there were also things where I was like, holy shit, I never thought about it like that. Never noticed that when I watched myself climb. And those are totally lessons that I picked up on for myself that have completely changed the way I look at the way my clients climb as well. So those lessons have been super applicable to me as a climber, but also to me as a coach.
Do you have any examples of those things?
Ooh, okay. The one that honestly broke my brain the most was like climbing with closed versus open hips. And like, you know, I've been climbing for a while. I found the hip shapes drill from you all, like, I don't know, 2 or 3 years into climbing. So I'm like, I know what closed hips are. Like, what are you talking about? Da, da, da. And I'm like, Nate, I like do both. I don't get what you're saying. He's like, but you don't like fully twist. And yeah, basically,
you are definitely a more square climber, I would say.
Oh, for sure. I'm a work in progress. It's gotten a lot better. But like, yeah, I would. And Nate was like, you literally are still basically squared up even when your hips are technically closed to the wall. And I was like, excuse me? Elaborate, please. And so he kind of like, it's like, yeah, I'm talking about movement on climbing podcasts is hard. But, you know, like it was very interesting because essentially I wouldn't like fully like, it was like my upper body and my hips had to be completely together. And I needed to like let my upper body twist away from my lower body, which is also interesting because that's something that's like very critical in skiing as well. I'm a skier. And so like allowing your upper body to be like separated from your lower body and like twist is really important in skiing too. So it's interesting that that's just something where, you know, I think maybe it was ballet class that was like, no, it all has to be perfectly aligned and like stuck together or whatever.
Sure.
Yeah. So that was really interesting to kind of realize that although my hips technically were closed to the wall, I wasn't fully twisting and fully getting as much out of those closed hip positions as I could have been. And that definitely has been a major thing that we worked on. And I think I've made good bit of progress in that department. But that was something really interesting where, you know, on the surface, you can be like, oh yeah, like their hips are open to the wall, their hips are closed to the wall, like next. But it's like, no, but are they like, are you fully twisted or not? And are you fully leveraging that? So that's one example that was kind of detailed that I thought was really interesting that I learned very fast. So,
yeah, I think that's super interesting. You know, to put that into some of the terminology that we've been using these last few weeks, that's largely coming from like the ecological approach to movement learning and skill acquisition is, you know, when a climber looks at the wall or steps onto the wall, they perceive specific affordances. And those affordances, which are essentially opportunities to act on their environment, those are informed by their action capacity, which means the way they move, their strength, the, you know, just the general way you climb when you step onto the wall. And if you're a climber who is putting their hips into the right positions, but still not really getting totally twisted and getting all the benefits of being twisted when those benefits are present, then you're still essentially seeing these opportunities as if you're a square climber. You know, it's
right.
You're never quite perceiving the affordances that twisting can allow, which is a really interesting thing because we think we're doing the technique, you know? We think we've become skillful in this technique when in fact you might only be going halfway and not really seeing the benefits of it.
100%. It's so interesting where, you know, I think if something's not working in a certain position, like maybe like a good climber would go, okay, this position isn't working, I need to try a totally different position. But a great climber would maybe go, okay, or is this position sort of working, but I need to change one or two details about it.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, the like scrap it and move on is good, but I also think there are like finer stuff and like smaller things that you would only know to look for if you're like watching a video of yourself or like watching someone in person, like because you have taken the time to really dig into the details and just practice and look. But those things I think can be really hard to learn on your own for sure.
Yeah. And if you're not coming in with intention, which is, you know, another reason to have a coach there, I find for sure that I can go in with intention, but depending on who else is there or what problems catch my eye or whatever, I might in 10 minutes be completely out of that intention and onto something else, you know? So having someone there who's keeping you in that like learning space that you came there for, I think can be really valuable.
Yeah, for sure. And I like, this is not to say that I don't think remote coaching is ineffective or something, because I think, you know, and also just like from a practicality and affordability standpoint, like not every single in-person coach is going to be available every time you go to the gym, and that would require a pretty intense budget. So yeah, I think both can be good, but I think having some help in person is really, yeah, it's been a great combo. Like Blake said to me, I was like, hey Blake, I think I'm gonna like do some in-person coaching with Nate. He was like, that is great. He was like, that is awesome. I am thrilled. I wish every single one of my clients could have an in-person session with like me or another coach that was good every single week. And I tell my clients that too. But I also feel like quality in-person coaching is not,
it's tough.
Feel super widely available.
Yeah, it's tough. I've worked with a lot of coaches.
Yeah.
And I see, and I'm trying to change this, you know, I'm probably harping on it too much over the years, but the thing I see most coaches do is hand out beta, you know, have you tried this? Have you tried this? Oh, look, you were just successful. Yay us, you know, that's sort of how I see it working a lot of the time. And I don't think it's an intentional thing. Like the coach is just a bad coach. I think it's just what we've been taught as climbers. Here's how you help someone perform better. But performance and learning are two totally different things.
Yeah. It's actually been super impressive. Like there have been sessions, because I know as a coach and with video, like giving video feedback, I feel like sometimes I really have to alternate between, you know, I'm very conscientious to alternate between giving away the answers and just being like, try this, and, you know, letting the struggle happen and asking good questions. But Nate will, it's very impressive to me as a coach. Nate will.
Does he frustrate you?
like, I wouldn't say he frustrates me, but I always have to leave like a good amount of buffer after our sessions because my brain hurts so bad. But I tell my clients that I'm like, in a skills session, I want you to leave like with your body. I want your brain to kind of hurt because you're thinking and trying to be intentional. And I feel like my brain hurts a lot because Nate will. Like, it's also funny because there'll be things where, like, he will let me struggle for like a half an hour and then I will eventually figure it out. And it's something that's like so simple. And I'm like, oh, a lesser coach than you would have had a very hard time watching someone struggle for 30 minutes on something that's like a really simple fix. But Nate will like let me deal. And I think it's really nice and impressive. I'm impressed with his ability to like, you know, struggle to like his like tolerance for letting clients struggle, I think is a really good thing. And I am impressed by that because as a coach, I definitely let the struggle happen and I will let people like scratch their heads on problems for, you know, two or three sessions sometimes before I really like, I'm like, okay, you have suffered enough. Let me tell you what needs to happen. But yeah, I like try to like, it's like everyone has a struggle meter and I'm like, okay, I try to keep it like at a, you know, good level as we're going. But yeah, it's hard to do. It can feel bad to have the answer of what's going to fix it and not tell people, but that's what you need to do. You need to learn to temper yourself. And I think I feel like you've probably seen this. I've been starting to go to this is a rant, but we're just doing it.
I've
been going to a normal, one of my athletes calls weightlifting gyms that are not climbing gyms, like, you know, a Planet Fitness or whatever. I think it's like an EOS. But I've been going, he calls them muggle gyms. So I've been going to a muggle gym. And I think that's so funny.
That's
I'm
perfect.
Like, yes, this completely encapsulates how I feel at like a
of
normal
Of course, one of
gym.
Your clients calls it a muggle gym. That makes total sense.
Yes, we have like my clients were all fantasy book nerds. I don't know how this happened, but like, I'm like, I just have my Goodreads account like open when I'm doing client feedback because sometimes people be like, hey, Lauren, not climbing related, but like, you should really read this book. And I'm like, thank you. Perfect. But like, so I've been going to a muggle gym and something I keep seeing, there's like a lot of like college kids that go to this gym, or at least I assume they're college kids.
And they're all bench
pressing. No, they're not. I don't know what they're doing. They're like chatting. They're like, it's the mall. They're flirting. I don't know what's going on. I saw a girl working out in a strapless top and I was like, tell me how. What magic glue are you using? This is wild, college girl. Like a strapless top in It's amazing. And everyone's hair looks good. Yeah, it's... Listen, these college kids know how to fashion, but they also sure do know how to like flirt with each other. And I don't know what the fuck they're doing to get better at anything. But okay, so anyways, what I see in the gym a lot is like insert college boy here who is like, quote, teaching his girlfriend about the gym. Mm-hmm. But she's not doing anything. He's just like showing her how he can do pull-ups.
Yeah, amazing.
And I'm like... Are you helping her or do you just feel like really smart and strong and like you're impressing someone? And I feel like the epitome of bad coaching is doing so much talking and doing not a lot of actually helping someone learn anything.
Yeah.
And then really good coaching looks like asking a lot of questions that help lead your client to where they want to get, but not, you know, always giving it away. So yeah, your coach. Okay, side thing. The coaching for mastery course is really good. If you're an aspiring climbing coach, you should definitely take that course and you'll be really good at stuff. Chris did not tell me to say that, but it's very good. Nate is definitely good at allowing the struggle is where I was going with that. But also, if you're a college girl that wants to learn how to lift, maybe find another girl that knows how to lift and don't try to learn from your boyfriend.
I love it. I think it is tough to let people struggle for long enough, you know, especially remotely. I've had clients that, you know, I can see that they're in the midst of a like climbing trip that's going to crash and burn, you know?
Ooh, that's and it's tough.
Yeah, it's tough. But I'm like, this is not their last climbing trip ever.
Chris, they're
going to have to learn. So I'll make some suggestions, but I'm also not going to push the matter. And I'm going to let it fail if it's going to fail, you know, because I think we have to learn those lessons. And that's hard to do, you know.
That's really hard. That's like some next level shit. I also work with a lot of people where it's like, this is the climbing trip of the year. And I'm like, okay, yeah, that's hard, but also important. My failed climbing seasons have been extremely good, and I'm glad there wasn't a coach there to be like, you're about to fuck this up royally. Like, I'm glad. It wasn't fun, but like, yeah. Those seasons where I did stupid stuff are really important. So,
totally. And you've still got a lot of seasons ahead of you. But that does sort of bring me to a point I want to talk about. Like, you come from a corporate background, and now you're in this... entrepreneurship place. How many hours a week are you working right now, roughly, on average? When people ask me this, I'm like, well, how many hours are there in a week? Because I'm working all of them.
Yeah, at this point, we're going to go with at least 60, and sometimes it's worse. Like, I blocked my calendar out this week, and I would say, yeah, it's bad. That's what I have to say.
Well, I think that's a real thing when you're running a little business.
It really
you know?
Is. Yeah. And you kind of like don't, there's when you try new things too, you'll like have some idea of how much time you think that's going to take you. But then sometimes you're super wrong and then it really bites you in the ass. But yeah, I definitely think it's really funny to say this, but I think when I was working for not myself, was I like kind, you know, the schedule was less flexible and all of those things. But I think because I didn't like my job, I felt very okay with like turning off the work part of my brain and being like, well, that's over for the day. We're going rock climbing now. But I think I can't do that as much now that I run my own business. But yeah, I definitely, I work, yeah, I'm kind of a workaholic right now. I'm working on it. I'm trying really hard to fix it.
We have a support group for workaholics, essentially.
Yes. I know. I was listening to the Ollie Tor episode on the Struggle podcast, like the coach chat that Ryan Devlin did. And Ollie Tor being like, yeah, I am workaholic and coaching often like overcomes my own climbing. And I was like, that makes me feel better. Because like sometimes I'm like, well, I am not like, you know, I'm not the typical like come from an elite climbing background and then start a coaching business person. I'm like, probably the people that like came from the elite climbing background are like still mega at not letting business overtake their lives. But it was refreshing to hear that I am not the only person that struggles with that.
Yeah.
Ollie Tor or not. So Yeah.
Well, I suspect, and I think I've seen you post about this before, that, you know, hiring Blake to do custom plans is a benefit to the fact that you don't have tons of mental space, emotional energy to put toward your own programming and planning.
Yeah, no, I don't. And I like, you know, I definitely do much better when I know that there is a Blake on the other end who has written me very nice, well thought out programming. And I'm like, I want to do it because Blake has done a great job and I need to do the things and this is what will help me. So, and he also makes me do things that I just struggle to make myself do for sure. No one wants to make themselves do hard power endurance. If you tell yourself to do five rounds, you're going to do four. Like, this is just, that's climber math. Like, if you program your power endurance yourself, you're going to do less.
Yeah.
That's unless you're a real thing. Hero, but that's very hard.
Well, so when you're like, when Blake programs a session for you and you're like, okay, I get to switch my brain off. I go in and I do this session that's laid out for me already. Now you're also adding this other thing into it, this in-person session. So I kind of want to talk about how we're fitting that into your busy life and how those sessions are fitting in with also climbing outside or skiing outside, you know, other things that are taking away from work time. So are you doing these in-person sessions like alongside at the same time as your sessions that Blake is programming?
Yeah. So usually I will like this is actually a good example because we're in the second part of our 12-week training block together. And so in the first half, I would kind of just, Blake was like, hey Blake, I'm still doing sessions with Nate. And his thought was just, you know, either do your Nate sessions on top of the programming I gave you. And, you know, if that means that we're doing, you know, less sessions in a week, then that's fine. You know, if one week is, you know, actually more 8 or 9 days, it is what it is. Or if you feel like what you did with Nate, you know, replaces something, like if what you did with Nate was basically limit bouldering, you can just kind of call that your limit boulder session for the week. So that's sort of like two ways that I've been able to couple it that way. This block, we're just kind of like calling it its own separate thing. And then I've kind of like, basically I'm doing like a Nate session every other week on top of my training with Blake and going skiing. So yeah, it's definitely been a lot to fit in, but I think something that Blake does a really good job of is having like a nice mix of sessions where, you know, some of them are really short sessions that I can just go lift in the gym for 45 minutes or 30 minutes and just get it done and, you know, whatever. And that's part of why I got, you know, logistically, there is a gym where I can go lift that is 4 minutes away. So I'm like, okay, now I don't have to. And I'm also like, I don't want to drive.
And this is a wizard gym, not a muggle gym.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. This is the climbing wizard gyms are like 20 or 30 minutes away. And then the muggle gym is like 4 minutes away.
Oh, got
right.
It,
so
got
I've
it.
Like have my sessions like life wise. I'm like, okay, I can go like to the muggle gym and like make that happen in a short amount of time. And then if I'm like getting a climbing session done, then I know I'm going to have to like drive and it's more of an event and all of that.
Got
so
it.
Then I'm like tried to like parse those out. Yeah. So like logistically, Nate sessions they used to be something that I was doing like weekly, but just for like time and budget reasons and all of that, I'm doing them like every other week, which I think is really helpful. But another thing that I kind of want to like say on top of this is that over the holidays, like November and December, I just was very busy with work, all the things, and I just didn't have anything like upcoming to really fully be on a training plan. And also just like, I think we all understand the melee that is the holidays and like travel and blah, blah, blah. So I think what helped me honestly continue progressing without even climbing that much was like my accountability to have, I was like, okay, well, everything might be going up in flames. I'm training 4 or 5 days a week for ski season, doing like a lot of cardio and like high volume leg stuff. But using in-person coaching as my like climbing maintenance, I was like, this is great because I'm still like working hard and I'm still learning how to be a better climber. And so like, even though I'm only climbing like once a week, my climbing sessions are super potent.
Yeah.
To answer your question, I kind of just like layer them in like at a somewhat regular frequency. And then I'm very, I mean, I guess, Chris, you probably relate to this. I feel like every week is different. I don't have any sort of consistent schedule. Sometimes I'm jealous of people that have like normal schedules. I am in the process of applying more structure to my work life, which will hopefully help with the workaholic thing.
You always will be.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, it's never going to be perfect. But, you know, there's a lot more structure now than there was 2 years ago in my business. So it's a work in progress, but sometimes are you ever jealous of people that just have like a predictable schedule?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I wish I had that. Like... but like you said, you know, it's a work in progress. It's once we learn what's working, we can put some focus toward those, make those the priorities. We can let things drop away. I'm a person who has constant new things I want to try and do. So it's tough to have a structure when there's, you know, I'm sure it drives Lana crazy because she is very rigid in that way. She loves to have like, here are my tasks. Tell me my tasks. And I'm like, hey, I'm throwing this whole new thing in. And then next week we're going to throw another new thing in. It's going to be fun.
You're like, welcome to my brain. You're just living in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Structure's tough in an ever evolving business.
Yeah, for sure. So I think like having, you know, flexible programming from Blake that I can kind of like move around and do what makes sense. And also something I really appreciate about Blake is this past training block, I knew work was going to be like crazy. And I was like, you know what feels like a reasonable goal is trying to do like 80% of what I technically should, you know, quote, should do based on like what Blake has laid out. And also it's ski season right now in Salt Lake. So I'm trying to do that because I did train my ass off through the fall so that I could ski really hard. And that's also fun too. I think the other fun thing about being an outdoor athlete is we're chasing good conditions. We're chasing good weather. So
yeah, fun in air quotes.
Yeah, it's fun. I think learning how to deal with a flexible schedule is like maybe another superpower that every climber should try to develop, because I think if you can develop flexibility instead of feeling like everything has to be really rigid, especially in an outdoor oriented sport, I think that's really helpful. But yeah, that's what I really, but again, I really like that about Blake's programming. I mean, I think I'm definitely like a motivated client, and me not getting my sessions done is not for lack of me wanting to. I definitely think there's something different to be said for like a person who's in a space where like learning, you know, exercise consistency and like learning to like stick with things is a different, you know, a different beast and totally a valid struggle as well. But I think Blake is very good about like not shaming me. And I'm like, I was like, Blake, my goal was to complete 80% of my sessions. And I did while like going skiing. And he's like, that's great. You did your climbing training. You tried hard. You had a life. Like, good job. You did it. And that always makes me feel nice. And it's like really helpful to have someone be like, good job. Like, you have done the thing.
Yeah, that's important. You know, one thing you sort of led into that I think skill sessions in particular can be really powerful for is you can have a skill session that is super high intensity, more like limit bouldering, or you can have a skill session that's pretty low intensity. And I suspect that if it were becoming an issue with your trying to ski, you're trying to climb in the gym, you're going to the muggle gym and lifting weights and watching college kids flirt, and and then you're coming into these skill sessions. If you were to tell Nate, like, hey, I need for the next month, I need these skill sessions to be lower intensity, that's not going to be a problem. It's not like, oh, well, we have to be giving super high effort all the time. There's a lot you can learn and a lot of ways you can improve without digging yourself into a hole. And I think that's where skill sessions become really valuable.
I think especially for, I think they're super valuable. It's so funny because I've been giving them to a lot of my athletes and I think a lot of them, they've been a little bit resistant to them. I think it's just because it's like something new. And also I feel like, other tirade. I feel like something that's been cool about skill sessions with Nate is that I've felt a lot better about my progress. And I think it's expanded my growth mindset even more because I can see things where I'm climbing better and I can feel that I'm climbing better. And I don't necessarily have some kind of like objective trophy rock climb or some like highly measurable like gym send or all of these things. But I'm like, oh, like I know that, you know, 4 months ago, Nate told me to do this. And I know that the reason he's having me climb this and what he's looking for is this. And I know I'm doing it better now. And I know that it looks good and that I'm like climbing it well. And
yeah,
that feels a lot. That feels like progress and that feels really good. And I think that's helped me feel less stressed out about being like, oh my God, I'm this many years into climbing and I should have climbed like XYZ and like blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah, I think like you've told me this before, but you're always like, okay, but you've also been like building a business and all these things. But for some reason, everyone expects coaches to be like the perfect coach and also spend 200 days outside a year and also be able to like do a one arm pull up. And I'm like, I am one human that is trying to help a lot of people. And I can't like, I don't know. So, but I think that's been a really cool thing is that like the way I view progress and skills is different. But I think what my, you know, what I'm working with my athletes on is that like, I think skill sessions can feel a little bit more confusing when you're doing them on your own, because if it doesn't feel like it's hard, or if your brain hurts and you just feel like you're doing like clunky shit that feels like you look dumb,
yeah,
or whatever, or you know, it feels like you're like uncoordinated or XYZ, you're like, this isn't helping. I'm just flopping around confused on the wall about what's going on.
I think I'm
on.
A worse climber today.
Like, I think this yesterday. Is making me, yeah, exactly. I'm like, I feel stupid, I look stupid, and I'm not even sweating. How could this possibly be helping me get better at rock climbing? But that's exactly the shit that's helping you get better at rock climbing. But it just doesn't feel like what we've been taught is, you know, like a good thing or like a hard thing, which is funny and ironic. And I think that can be even harder when you're trying to figure it out yourself, too.
Totally. I have a question for you, but I'm sort of going to preface it with a story. I've been going down this sort of rabbit hole of thematic movement learning, thinking less about individual techniques and more about what are the themes of how all moves work. You know, things like tension and effort and and putting them into these bigger buckets. And I've been trying to build my sessions around those themes for the past few years just to see how it works. And one of the things that's tough with movement sessions is that they're fairly specific scenarios that elicit different movements, you know, or different solutions. And you may not find those outside for the whole next season, you know, that may not be showing up in your climbing readily, like finger strength would. You know, you grab a hold, you feel stronger. Oh, my finger strength got better. The movement is a little more amorphous, you know, but I had a situation the other day where it was cold outside. It was too cold to try my project because I was just going to numb out on the second bolt. It's all crimps for, you know, 50 feet, there's no rest, there's no chalking, there's no nothing. You just bear down on holds over and over. So I'm going to numb out immediately. So I'm like, well, I'll go up this other thing next to it that's hard as well. And I want to check it out so that maybe it's a future project. And I got to what was obviously the crux section. And the things I've been working on, one grip type, which is full crimping. I've talked about this a lot. I'm not good at full crimping. I don't choose to full crimp. So what I've been trying to do is not necessarily just go and full crimp everything, but I've been trying to recognize what are the situations where a full crimp is better for me than my superpower, which is half crimping or three finger open or something like that. When is it beneficial? Not can I crimp? Because I know I can now, but when do I use it? And then this other more amorphous thing I've been working on is I recognized that I had, like, I'm good in small boxes, but there's one particular small box I found I was bad in. And it was more of a tension and position thing than just a, I'm bad at Gastones, because some Gastones I'm really fucking good at. But, but I was discovering that when a, when I was put into a certain position, I had a really hard time understanding the tension and where to position my hands in relation to my shoulders. And on this project I went up the other day, the crux move was grab this little crimp, grab a Gastón next to it, get a really high foot, and it was the exact position that I have the hardest time with.
Okay.
Most people then just explode out of that position in an off-balance way and like thrutch for the jug. Okay. And I knew that, and I tried that, and I was like, oh, that I could do that. I did it first try. I can do that move, but I think there's a better way that will set me up better. And I just started exploring, and I was holding this crimp open-handed because there was a perfect thumb really low. And okay. I tried the move, and I was like, oh, that doesn't really work. Let me hold that hold different. And I found another thumb that puts me in full crimp. And then all of a sudden, I found the tension and did the move. And I did it a couple more times and climbed through, linked it to the top. And then when I came down, I was thinking about it. And I was like, that's like the perfect visual, the perfect moment for what I've been practicing for the last 3 years. 3 years ago, I never would have found the full crimp. I would have kept the open hand and the low thumb because I was positive that's my superpower. And rather than finding the tension for the Gastón, I would have just smeared a foot and thrutched for the jug like almost everyone else does. But I found this really cool, super repeatable way that felt really in control to do this move. But that's the first time all of this practice has shown up in one spot for me. So, long story short, my question is, well, actually, long story long, my question is it showing up? Are these skill sessions showing up in your climbing and how?
Ooh, okay. Yes, for sure. Hold on. Before I'm going to ask you a question now, just to clarify, because this is fun. So do you think part of why the full, think part of why the like wrapping up into a full crimp helped was just because like it sounds like you're in a little bit of a scrunchy box, so it almost like pulled you up maybe by like an inch or two, and that just made it slightly better and a little bit roomier? Like, is that part of what helped? Or
I don't think so. I think it's more, I think it's more a like, I am good at feeling like I'm in control in scenarios where most people feel out of control and thrutchy. Okay. I feel like I can control that tension really well.
For sure.
But because this was in a small little box, the little bit of momentum that I use wasn't useful. And and I needed to lock everything down tight. For this particular scenario, like all the holds are in a very small little sphere. And my normal is to like be a little lerpy, and I control that really well. That was not always my normal. Again, that became my normal through lots of practice to be lerpy instead of just super rigid and static when I was a trad climber. But that lerpiness was not going to be helpful in this scenario. It was bad feet, tiny crimp, Gastón that was giving me nothing until I got my left foot really high, almost to the same level as my hand. And because of that, I just needed that tension that I think the full crimp allowed me, whereas the open hand almost leads me into being a little more lerpy. I can still lock it down, but in this scenario, it just wasn't. And the win was that I came across that quickly, as opposed to I need to watch 10 people do it. Oh, they're all full crimping. Let me try the full crimp. You know, this was a, I'm in this spot for 5 minutes trying different things, and I found the solution for me all in ways that I would not have gone 3 years ago.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, I think like, the number of years I got away with being absolutely awful at heel hooks is like pretty funny, honestly. Like, I don't know how I did it. I got really good at dead. I think like part of me getting really good at dead pointing was that instead of heel hooking something, I could just push off of whatever and kind of like jump, latch on, and make it work. Even in situations where that was not the most efficient way or necessary. But I think I just got so good at that that I was able to kind of like circumvent the beauty and delight that is heel hooks. But so that was a big thing that I realized on a trip with my friend and podcast co-host Caitlin. Like when I went to Waco, I was like, oh, this ain't gonna work. Like it was like everything was a heel hook, and I was like, this is my heel hook wake up call. Like I need to stop being in denial. But now I think like I just do it automatically and it feels so much more chill. Like the first time you just like do a thing on a flash go and it wasn't something you thought you would, or
yeah,
you know, whatever, like it just automatically happens and you're like, that was a good one, that was on something small, like I have intuited whatever. And also I think to your point about, it's almost like a two-part thing where it's like, one, you have to be able to recognize if this is a situation where you're going to need that skill. And then Two, you actually have to do it. And that's something that I think has been really interesting. Like I've done a little bit of in-person coaching with people lately, and something really interesting with people that, you know, just to keep using heel hooks as an example, because I think it's very tangible. That's something where, you know, I'll ask them, I'll like, say everything. Like I'll be like, I will try ask them like 20 questions to Sunday about whatever, and they just still won't arrive that the heel hook is the beta. And I'm like, you just don't see it yet. Like you don't see it yet, and that's like a big problem. It's like seeing it first is a big thing, and that's something I'm coaching a lot of athletes on with, like toe hooks too. Like there's just certain stuff where like you have to learn to see the opportunities, and then you also have to like know the skill in order to do it. So I think it's been cool to see that happening with heel hooks for me. And then, oh man, another thing that's been really interesting is keeping my feet on when I dead point is another thing, because I think as the holds get smaller and things get more difficult, but I think I've learned to like, I don't know, like use my hips and almost like scoop into the wall in a different way than I had before. Like instead of just like launching, it's more like a go up and then pull my toe in to holds. And that's something that Nate and I have been working on, but now I'm starting to recognize it and do it more automatically. Especially on the moon board, that feels like a place where that kind of like,
yeah,
pull in like almost like talon into the wall, mm-hmm, while you're dead pointing so that your feet stay on, even if you're really stretched out, is kind of another skill that has been popping up and that I've been doing more easily. So there's definitely been those things, and that's what's been making me a lot more psyched about rock climbing, and just honestly a lot less stressed out about feeling like I have to like hit certain objectives or like climb certain things. I'm like, no, I can like see I'm getting better, and that's just a lot more fun than only using grade, like truly. And like I know like we've all said this and blah blah blah, but like truly so much more fun than trying to just see progress in terms of, you know, what grades we're climbing.
Yeah, I just put out a newsletter this morning talking about what we value in climbing movement. And I think it shows up here in that, yes, I've been working on these things for several years in the gym, but when I go outside and pick a project, I'm picking things that don't involve these things I'm bad at. You know, I'm like, oh, little crimps, fuck that. Nope. give me big slopers or two finger pockets. That's what I want. So now that I'm leaning into more of these things, like the last three things I've sent all had tiny little things that I full crimped.
Hell yeah.
The 13B I sent a couple of weeks ago had five full crimps in a row. That's more that's times dope than I've full crimped in my entire climbing career, all in a row.
Yeah, that sounds really tiring. Good job.
It was very tiring. But you have to lean into those things outside, the things that you're bad at, the things that you avoid, the things that you maybe don't value in the same way, in order to have those things show up. And I think that's a step a lot of people miss, is trying the things in performance as opposed to just in practice.
Yeah, for sure. And also, yeah, I'm like going back to, this just reminds me, I'm going back to Moe's Valley in a couple of weeks, and I don't know if it's going to happen, but I feel like I've gotten so much better at a lot of the things that were potentially keeping me from sending this boulder that I was working on down there. And I'm like, you know, whatever happens, I'm really excited to go and try some things out, and it'll be really fun.
Well, that's exciting. I can't wait to see how it goes. Something you just said, I have to do a quick aside, because you mentioned this earlier, talking about Nate's Nate talking about your twisting technically, you know, you're closing your hips technically, but you're really still climbing like your hips are open. And I, you know, what you just mentioned as well, that you're like, you have to lock the lower body in, you know, while you're doing this other thing. And that's a thing I've been working with someone on recently that I think is really interesting, is that when we say tension, and that's one of my big like global themes that I think plays a part in every single move we ever do, we think in terms of like, oh, tension just means you tighten your core up, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
but in reality, it's more like you have to tension the right parts of the movement or of the
at the right time
the path at the right time while not tensioning the other parts, you know? So everything doesn't get locked into this rigid board. I might lock my lower body into place while moving my upper body. I might lock my upper body into place while moving my lower body, you know, especially on these like more techie things I've been doing lately. We look at a vertical climb and we're like, oh, that doesn't require as much tension as a roof. For me, it requires more because I'm really locking down individual parts and moving other parts. So it's a higher level of tension. It may not be more core, so to speak,
right?
But it's a higher level. It's a higher mastery of tension, in my opinion.
I completely agree. I honestly think, like, not to just invent new terms just to be pedantic, but I feel like tension coordination almost feels like what I think about. And yeah, that's something that I've been working on myself, and I have like a couple of clients that are working on this too. I'm curious to hear what your thoughts are on this, but I feel like something that people learn with these gym routes where you kind of dunk to a big hold, and if you get strong enough, you can kind of like cut feet on whatever, even if it's like a pretty decent like 2 or 3 pad in cut crimp. Eventually you just get strong enough where you can kind of cut your feet and make stuff work, and you know, the hold is big enough, the feet are literally colorful blobs on the wall and they're big ish inside. And I think people develop, myself included, this bad habit of when you like dunk to something, you can cut your feet and it's going to be okay. But eventually the holds are going to get smaller, the sequences are going to get tougher, and you having this automatic response of like, if I'm dead pointing, I can let my lower body go slack while my upper body, you know, it's like your upper body's moving and then you let the lower body tension go. And I think relearning how to keep your lower body just as tight, if not tighter, while your upper body's moving is so like pat your head while you rub your tummy. And it's really weird. And I think it's a hard thing to learn and a hard habit to break if you're used to the like dunk and cut style of climbing that happens. Yeah. And I think also as a short person, that's happened to me even more in the gym, just because like, you know, sometimes there are not footholds where you're legitimately going to be able to reach, or where if you did, you know, it's maybe actually easier to just cut your feet instead of trying to keep a bunch of tension. But eventually, you know, that's going to run out. Do you have any, okay, while we're talking about this, what are some of your favorite ways to like coach that kind of tension coordination?
For me, especially these days, it mostly comes down to constraints. Like if I'm, I want to put constraints in place as often as possible that lead the climber to the solution instead of telling them how to get to the solution.
Okay.
So I think things like really small feet are super valuable. If you have a home wall, the gym is not going to have that available. But the constraint that might be in place there is the feet are small enough that if you cut feet, it's really hard to get them back on. And then you're campusing on things you can't campus on. So,
and then that sucks.
So not, you know, I'm not necessarily saying you have to keep your feet on, but I'm making it a more efficient solution.
Attractive.
If you do, a more attractive solution. If you do keep your feet on, because then you're able to do the next move rather than just having to drop off the wall because you can't get your foot back on. So I try to put those sorts of constraints in place.
That's fun.
There might also be a way to, the problem of like going into a commercial gym and trying to do this is that all the feet are gigantic.
And the feet that look small aren't actually small. Like they just are the smallest of the big feet, but outside you'd be psyched on this hold. Yeah.
Right. You're set up to learn this way of like, I can be loosey goosey and do all the moves. Mm-hmm. So I do think there has to be some sort of verbal cueing there. I do like, and this doesn't really fit into like the ecological approach of teaching movement, but when we're doing it remotely, I do like our rooting drills that are separated into top half and bottom half at first, and then we start to put them together.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are some things we can improve on the way we've laid out to like coach yourself or coach other people with that. Things like, rather than thinking about put all the tension through my legs, maybe think about try to rip the footholds off the wall. So it's more an external focus of attention instead of internal, things like that. So, so for me, it's about let's put some constraints in place that make it so that this is the best solution for you, as opposed to
like that.
Just stay tight through your lower body. You know, we're actually pretty bad at doing the things we think we're doing.
Yeah. Ooh, I have a fun one. I've been wanting to tell you about it, but now we're here talking about movement. So I'm going to tell you this combo that I think is a pretty fun way to, this feels almost like a trying to change people's default on easier terrain versus not, I mean, I think obviously there's a lot of ways to go about this, but I like putting this into people's warmups when I know we're trying to almost like retrain this. Like I go to the big hold and then I let my feet cut off. So I like combining the hover drill and the dead stop drill. And so I'll do just before hovers, but I'll have someone like climb up and then hover over the hold so that, you know, in the first lap up the boulder, they're really just focused on body tension and like what that's going to feel like, you know, body tension all over the place, da da da. And then I have them do the dead stop drill after that, where you kind of like try to like, for anyone that's unfamiliar with the dead stop drill, it's essentially where you, it's a Chris drill. I don't know if you got that from anyone, but I love it.
I think Nate came up with that one. It's more like exploding through the beginning of the move and then trying to slow everything down right at the end and not actually take the hold quickly like you would if you were just jumping.
Yeah, I always tell people I'm like, dead stops are like fast hovers. That's a little bit simplified, but I think that sometimes like helps people. I'm like, it's like where the first part's going to be fast and then you're going to like hover right at the end. But I think that one is a fun combo. I also really like things where you like combine two drills and then you have someone like climb the same problem like two times in a row on that. Like Blake's definitely had me do that with rooting, where I'll do like rooting feet, rooting arms on the same boulder and then like root it all together. And I think that can be a really fun combination way to program.
Yeah, totally. That one really exploits the like the cycling of tension as opposed to just create all the tension. You know, it's more like you have to release like all this tension to explode. And then while you're in the middle of your move, you have to be creating the tension somehow. I think movement and skill sessions are a ridiculously undervalued part of climbing training and becoming a better climber. You know, these days at the Crag, 98% of people out there have stronger fingers than I do, but for some reason, they're still not sending the things I'm sending. And it's because it's so common now to only focus on strength and not really pay much attention to the skills. And if we're not putting ourselves into situations and scenarios where we have to use other solutions, then we just will always default to the same solutions that work for the things we're choosing. And when we run up against the roadblock, we just stop instead of finding a way through it.
Yeah. Ooh, I have a fun fun anecdote from the Empowered event that you all did in Chattanooga like way back when. We all did assessments and then, you know, we were going to get feedback about what we should probably work on, right? And I remember talking to my friend Alec and I was like, man, I don't think this is gonna happen for me, but I really hope my problem is strength books because that's way easier to work on than getting better at rock climbing. And that was not the case. Like, I need to work on power a little bit, I think was the big takeaway. But like me, no, that was not the problem. I was just like praying that was the problem. And I think like talking about strength is just easier. And, you know, the process of developing your skills could be a little bit muddier, harder to talk about, harder to define, and also like harder to make yourself focus. Like, you can kind of go on, you know, autopilot and just get your deadlifts done, but that's not really what you want to be doing when you're practicing skills. So
totally. Well, you know, you brought up Empowered, and I don't know if you remember this, but when we had all the coaches up front and we were looking over my client Lucas's like schedule, I think this is when this happened.
He was like Nate, an EMT.
Yeah. Nate kept, every time he would be talking, he would like lower his voice and get into his like ASMR, you know, vocal inflections. And he does that on the podcast all the time. So I've always threatened to just take all the bass out of his voice when I'm editing. But does he do that in person sessions too?
I have to watch out. I don't think so. I have to watch out for it.
Just curious.
maybe if it's like, if Nate's got like a good monologue coming on, potentially, a good like,
Nate loves the monologue.
Sit down, children. You're about to learn about the path of least resistance.
I'll give you the secret clue to know when he's about to do it, because I've edited his his vocals for so long now. When Nate goes, that means he's about to drop into his deeper ASMR voice and go into a monologue. So next time you hear him do that, you know what's coming.
I love it. That's a good cue. I'll know. I'll be like, perfect. I will take my shoes off now. We will not be rock climbing for a second. Excellent.
Well, for everybody out there, if you happen to be in the Salt Lake area, you can work directly with Nate. I'll also have links where you can reach him for a consult in the show notes. And Lauren, if people want to find you online, where can they do that?
Okay, you should go to goodsprayclimbing.com. Also, I'm going to shout out my movement course that I created. It is totally free. So if you go to goodsprayclimbing.com/fast-track, this discussion of movement got you psyched. I love my course. Over 350 people have gone through it now. I've gotten awesome feedback on it. And I wish I had this course like a year into rock climbing. I would have wasted a lot less time climbing poorly. So you should check that out. And then you can also find me on Instagram at goodspraycoaching.
Perfect. I'll have links to all of those things as well. And I really appreciate your like constant pursuit of adding value for your clients and for creating things that are going to be valuable to people. I wish there was more of that in the climbing world instead of just chasing likes and chasing follows. So I appreciate that you do that, and I definitely recommend that people follow you and check out your free movement course. I can't imagine that it's anything but valuable.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. I appreciate that.
And you also, you totally skipped over this, but Average Climber Podcast, you are
the
host over there.
Yes, absolutely. Check that out. If you want to talk more about training, and also my delightful co-host Caitlin is a certified nutrition specialist, so we cover all things training and nutrition over there, and it's pretty darn fun and loosey-goosey in a good way, if I do say so myself.
I agree. All right, at the link in your show notes, you find all the things we mentioned in the episode, as well as all the ways you can go deeper with us. Related training plans and courses, our Patreon, where patrons get bonus episodes every month, and of course, our newsletter, The Current, where we'll always be connecting dots so that you can learn, grow, and excel. This time,